Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Yes. The Rams are who we thought they were. Or maybe the Titans are. Either way, you are listening to Next Fan Up. We are the podcast by the fans, for the fans. And we're here to break down the mega trade that just went down in the NFL. And we'll be talking a little bit about the schedule that was just dropped. And we're even going to break into our own mock draft, because it sure is a good thing we did a 7-round mock right before our mega trade that scrambles the whole top of it. But we're gonna be getting through some of those picks with some of the, you know, recaps from our fans that participated. But first of all, I got to introduce you to our team here. We are joined by the, once again, the ever reasonable, never scary, the kindest little bear you'll ever meet. That is Chicago Tom.
How's it going out there?
Pretty good. And we have our list master extraordinaire. That would be our Saint super fan, Chris. How's it going, Chris?
It's going well. How are you gentlemen doing?
Doing just fine. So, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, obviously the big news that the whole league is still digesting. And I hope you're hearing this first from us, because that means you come to us for all of your NFL news. I don't know how you would have missed this otherwise. But we have a trade. The Rams announced 2 weeks early that they have moved up from the 15th overall spot in the first round of the draft all the way to number one. They trade to the Titans. They're giving up their first this year, their first next year, 2 second-round picks this year, a third round this year, a third round next year. In exchange, they get back not only the first overall pick, but they get a fourth and a sixth this year from the Titans. You know, we'd been speculating for a long time about, you know, who was going to try to move up to one, whether or not the Titans were going to be able to get a draft haul that that would warrant them moving down. And here we have it. It's unique because it happened so early, but it's certainly interesting. We are hoping to have actually both our Titans superfan and our Rams superfan on to discuss it. We are going to be speaking with Jared, our Rams superfan, a little bit later. But Jason, our Titans superfan, he had something come up at the last minute. He wasn't able to join us. But I can tell you that both of them have been expressing on Slack their utter elation with the move. Both are pretty happy. I'm sure for the Titans, you know, this gives them a lot of ammunition, a lot of high picks in order to rebuild that pretty bare roster right now. And for the Rams, you know, it's a huge risk, but they're getting a chance to move up and get their quarterback. So before we toss it over to Jared, what were your guys' first reactions to the move itself?
Well, my first reaction, when I read about the trade, I immediately started reading in the media and hearing on television about how great this was for the Titans and what a wonderful job their general manager, John Robinson, did, and what a great general manager he is for pulling this off. And I got to tell you, I'm not buying it. You know, these guys had the second overall pick last year, and took Marcus Mariota, and now they're back this year with the first overall pick. I got to tell you, my grandmother could have picked Mariota and put together a lousy team, falling backwards into pig poo. So I'm not too impressed. If the Titans want to impress me, they'll not just pick talent, but develop it and build a winning team. And until I see that, I think that they're still just like the Browns and a lot of the other bottom feeding teams in the league. And I'll believe that this was a good move by an organization that's turned it around when I see it.
I like it on both fronts. I completely agree with Tom. I mean, Tennessee is bad, and they've been bad for a while. And one of the worst things you could be is the first pick back-to-back years, or that high up. This is what they needed. I mean, I think I read something like they had 6 picks within the first 79. That's insane. That's going to give them the ability to address a lot of positions. And as far as the Rams go, you know, I'm reading a lot of comparisons. You know, my beloved Saints and that Ricky Williams trade that set us back to selling 10 years. you know, the RG3 trade is another one that comes up. But this reminds me a lot of the Falcons Julio Jones trade. The Rams seem to be a good team. They're missing that one piece. And that one piece is quarterback, which is the hardest thing to get in the NFL. There's teams that, like the Rams, they've not had one for 10 years. You know, I believe Justin brings that up. So this is something that could potentially work out for both parties. But, man, the Rams have to pick right here. If they go Goff or Wentz and they don't pan out, it's not going to be a great start to L.A.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on whether or not either Wentz or Goff, whoever they choose at the top, whether or not they shake out to become a franchise quarterback. I mean, obviously, if they get a franchise quarterback with this, even a guy who's maybe not, you know, the top five, but even top 10 guy that they can build a team around and be stable enough to get, you know, regularly into the playoffs with, then this is absolutely worth it, you know, without a question. But if he's even just mediocre, then this is a horrible decision, in my opinion. For the Titans, though, I mean, it's great. You know, I think, especially in this draft more than others, there seems to be a fairly long plateau of good talent all the way through the top 100. I mean, really, especially through to, you know, maybe pick, you know, 70 or so. Like, the first and second round is chock full of really good players. And so in order to maximize this many selections and that, you know, in that premium slice of the draft, I think is a real big coup for them. And, you know, I think it's even more interesting that they were able to do this and announce it 2 weeks ahead of time. It makes you wonder if they might have been able to get more with a little bit more leverage, but it gives them an extra 2 weeks to strategize in terms of how they're going to deal with their picks and whether or not they want to move up again, you know, using a package of some of what they have here, you know, get back into the top 10, maybe grab a premium player. It certainly is interesting.
You know, and something else that it gives Tennessee is it gives them the ammo to take chances on these players that have red flags. Your Kim DJ and the Jalen Smith for other reasons. Noah Spence, another one. You know, if they end up with one or two of those players in the second round, they could still have a really good draft and that player not pan out. They have the ability to really turn this team around with this draft.
Good point. Well, before we turn it over to Jared, I just want to remind you folks out there in the audience that if you are looking to hear some of our back episodes, we've been going twice a week for a while now, but especially we just rattled through our full first round of our seven round mock with each of our individual team super fans / GMs making their selections, explaining their pick in our first round. And we split that up into two shows that dropped this week. It's really good content to get a real fan's perspective on how they want their team to strategize and approach this thing. And you can find all of that at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can also find that on Facebook by just typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. And you can find all of our content at, as well as a lot of chatter and news that we get in discussions with on Twitter at NFU Podcast. But let's kick it over to Jared, the guy who's just moved himself up to the top of the draft. All right, we are now joined by our Rams superfan, Jared, to talk about the mega trade that was just announced this week. It was really interesting, just largely due to the fact that it was 2 weeks before the draft. And it's the biggest trade we've seen since the RG3 trade that involved three first-round picks. We'd been talking for a long time about how, you know, the Titans, they've been wanting to move down. It's not great value for them at the top of the draft. They don't need a quarterback. And we were waiting for somebody to make a move, and the Rams are the ones to do it. I mean, I just the only other news we had with you guys this week is you did re-sign your kicker, Greg Zuerlein. And so it appears, Jared, you're not going to take a kicker first overall. What do you think they are going to do?
Thanks for having me, Nick. I really think they're going to take Carson Wentz, but I wouldn't be shocked if they took Jared Goff. I just really think that Wentz has the skill set that Fisher looks for. He's more the high risk, high reward. That's what Fisher likes. He's also a bigger, stronger type of a more prototypical quarterback. And that's, I mean, they've only drafted two quarterbacks in the 4 years they've been with the Rams, but they were both big, tall, strong, kind of prototypical type quarterbacks. So But I mean, Goff is a great prospect too, so I wouldn't be sad if they took him. I just feel like Wentz kind of fits more what Fisher and Snead are looking for in a quarterback.
And so there's been a lot of talk, I mean, a little bit of angst about, this is just a big splashy move now that the Rams have moved to L.A. They're trying to do something big that's just going to excite the new fans there down in SoCal. But do you think it's actually a good strategic move for the franchise?
You know, I do. I'm not 100% sure and then say, this is a move with no risk and it's going to definitely work out. But you can't go into a new season in a market like LA for the first season with Case Keenum as your starting quarterback. It's just not going to work in today's NFL. So the fans are interested, but they're not going to have a long attention span if they lose a lot. So you need to make a big, bold move to get a franchise quarterback. And the Rams are one of those teams that doesn't have a franchise quarterback. And if you look at their roster between Foles and Keenum and Sean Mannion, none of those guys, there's a less than 10% chance any of them are ever going to turn into a franchise quarterback. So you have to make a bold move. And even with free agency, I don't think any of those quarterbacks who are available are franchise-type quarterbacks. I think Brock Osweiler's maybe has a league average quarterback, but I don't think if he couldn't even beat out a 40-year-old Peyton Manning last year with Peyton barely throwing the ball 15 yards down the field, I just don't see the ceiling with him if he's been in the league for 4 years, if this is where he's at. So it's definitely a much better move than, say, going out and signing someone like Fitzpatrick or Osweiler in free agency. So I like it in that sense. They're basically, everybody makes a joke. Oh, the Rams, they're 7-9, 8-8 every year. They're just stuck in mediocrity. Well, this is, if they didn't draft either of them, they would just continue in that endless streak of, you know, mediocrity, never having a great quarterback. I mean, the roster isn't bad enough to get a top five pick. They're kind of like the Bills and Jets, they're kind of just stuck in quarterback purgatory. So so I like the move in that sense, although it does come with a lot of risk. Oh, I was also going to say, yeah, they gave up basically an extra first, 2 seconds, and 2/3. They have an extra second from the Bradford trade last year. And losing Janoris Jenkins in free agency this year, they're most likely going to get a third-round comp pick next year. So they do have some flexibility with the draft picks of being able to make this move and not have it just be a complete loss of draft picks going forward next year. So and I think that's one of the reasons they were able to make this move, and a team like, say, the Jets or even the Bills would have had a more difficult time making that move because of just the sheer cost of going up. And even though they went up from 15 all the way to number one, they actually gave up less value of picks than the Redskins went just going from 6 to 2 4 years ago. And there's other example of trades like the Ricky Williams trade and the Herschel Walker trade where there was more draft picks given. So this is probably the fourth most draft picks ever given, but it's not, it's bad, but it's not the worst.
I also just find it interesting because you guys were on the receiving end in the sense of the last mega trade of the RG3. And a lot of people would say that, your franchise essentially made the Redskins look like fools in the amount that they gave up and the amount of quality players you were able to add to the foundation of your team through all those picks that you got as a result of the trade. I mean, are you worried that you're now, you know, going to end up on the other end of that?
A little bit. That's the risk of this trade, because if either Goff or Wentz, whoever they pick, doesn't work out, then yeah, that's going to be the criticism, and then it's a valid one, and Fisher and Snead are going to be out of a job. So that's definitely the downside. But the upside is you have a shot at getting a franchise quarterback, and the Rams have just been in quarterback purgatory for almost 10 years. I mean, Bradford showed some promises first 2 or 3 years after he won Rookie of the Year and was starting to put things together, but then the back-to-back ACLs, and he was pretty much done. So if you're a team that doesn't have a franchise quarterback, if you're a fan of, say, the Jets or the Bills or the Browns or one of these teams that just hasn't had a good quarterback in about a decade, it is it is just so frustrating. Could have all these other great players, like the Rams have Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, Todd Gurley, three great players. But if you have a bad quarterback situation, you just have no hope of ever winning a Super Bowl or even making a deep playoff run. So because of that, I think the risk of them flaming out and then you being really hurt in draft capital is kind of the price of doing business to move up to get a potential franchise quarterback. Because as I kind of mentioned earlier, Osweiler, RG3, Kaepernick, Fitzpatrick, all those guys available in free agency or trade, they're just very low probability of them becoming a franchise quarterback again. And say the Rams stayed pat and they didn't trade up. They just either took, say, Paxton Lynch at number 15 or maybe Connor Cook in the second round. I mean, I would have been more frustrated if they did that and hoping that they turned out, because, I mean, I'm not a complete draft expert or anything, but the probability of either of those guys becoming a franchise quarterback is so much lower than Wentz or Goff. I just feel like the drop from tier one to tier two in this draft for the quarterbacks is so low that even though, yeah, they did give up a lot, and I'm sure every team in the AFC South is mad at the Rams for just giving all these picks to the Titans, I just feel like it's the right move. The Rams have just been stuck in mediocrity so long, they just need to make a big move to try to get that franchise quarterback. I mean, if you get a franchise quarterback, look at the Patriots, the Packers, the Steelers. They've had franchise quarterbacks and have been good for more than a decade, sometimes 15 years. I mean, if you hit one, it's worth giving up three or four number one picks if you can get one and they're good for 15 years. And they're good. They're basically $6 million a year for the first 4 years in the league instead of, you know, $18 to $22 million a year. And you can use that money to pay for other players. So yeah, it's definitely a high risk, but I think it's worth a chance where the Rams are at right now.
Good stuff. Well, either you, Tom, or Chris have any questions for Jared?
So, Jared, I mean, I like this trade in that I think better of the top three quarterbacks than most people do. I think there's some talent there, but that's only half of the equation. You know, the other half is developing that talent into something. And I look at the Rams coaching staff. It's a real good defensive staff with Greg Williams and Jeff Fisher. But I don't see much in the way of offensive coaches. And in particular, I think your quarterback coach is Chris Wanky. And I don't think he's ever been an NFL coach before he joined the Rams. So it's not like there's a lot of history of developing quarterbacks there. Are you at all concerned that they're going to draft somebody really good and then just sort of waste the talent by, you know, not having the talent on the coaching staff to develop it into something?
You know, that is a concern. I believe Wanky was their coach last year, so it's his second year, but still not a sterling record with the Rams quarterbacks last year. He did have some experience at one of those performance institutes where a lot of the draft eligible quarterbacks like Cam Newton, RG3, those type of guys went into him, and he would kind of coach them up for, you know, 3 to 4 months from the draft, from the end of the college season to the draft. So he does have some experience working with quarterbacks, but yeah, that definitely is a concern that we don't, our talent on, it's just coaching staff is on the defensive side. And that kind of is another reason why I think they're leaning towards Wentz is they're a defensive coaching staff predominantly. And it's, they're more conservative. So you could have a guy like Wentz who's more, I could picture him almost be like a Big Ben in his rookie year, like, you know, a really big physical athlete from a smaller school where, you know, you only have him throw 15 times a game and you rely on that run game. And then maybe over time, and even Russell Wilson did that a lot his first year or two in the league. So that is definitely a concern. Another concern is just the sheer talent on the offensive side of the ball. Giving up those draft picks hurt because it gives up picks that you could use to bolster the offense. So I would say they've got Gurley, obviously, and even though Tavon Austin isn't your prototypical wide receiver, I think he was sixth or seventh in the league in terms of touchdowns scored by wide receivers. I mean, he had a lot rushing, a lot receiving, and he can definitely make the defense have to plan for him. And Gurley was phenomenal last year, and that was with a makeshift offensive line and coming off a serious injury. So Gurley fully healthy, and a lot of those rookies last year, I think, solidifying, and including Greg Robinson, I think the offensive line is going to be a lot better. So, but yeah, definitely I wish we had a more established offensive coordinator on our staff to develop this guy, but I mean, I guess you got to work with what you got.
I have a quick question for you before you go. Not only does this trade net you a future quarterback, but it also completely freed up your Friday during the draft. So do you have any big plans? I mean, you get the entire day off now. So take the kids to the park, go to the bar, anything in particular?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I only have to turn in from about, well, I'm in the West Coast, and from about 5:15 on Thursday till sometime Saturday morning. I don't even have to turn on the TV or worry about anything. So yeah, I'll probably take, I think my son and I have a baseball game that day, so I'll probably do that. And then, I'll watch some probably NBA playoffs and just have all, and I can focus on my work on Friday, not have to worry about anything with the draft. But that, I'm sure Jeff Fisher and Les Snead will probably be heading to Disneyland or something that day. But yeah, it's definitely frees up the calendar.
All right, well, good stuff. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Jared, and good luck with your first pick and then your, you know, several days of chilling out with your martinis waiting to get your next chance to grab a falling defensive prospect or something.
Awesome. Thank you. Not quite as much as, you know, Mike Ditka was after the Ricky Williams trade. But, yeah, hopefully they can snag some day three gems on Saturday.
So we should not expect Jeff Fisher in a wedding dress, is what you're saying.
Yes, that would be very frightening. So hopefully that won't be happening.
All right. So we're really glad that we're able to have Jared jump on and talk about how this big trade affects the future of his team. But moving on now to the other big piece of news that we had this week, which is that the NFL released the official 2016 schedule. And granted, we already knew who the opponents were going to be for every team, but I actually think the schedule is a very underrated aspect of all of this. I mean, we talk about a lot of other things, but, you know, there's always sort of a sense of false momentum and things like that. We're in reality, oftentimes it's the fact that, you know, teams face a string of easy teams and then a string of hard teams. Anyways, we'll have a lot of time this offseason to talk about, all of the interesting narratives that are going to be set up by the schedule, but I just wanted to give it to you guys to see, you know, what's the matchup and the particular date on this the schedule that you're most excited about, starting with you, Tom.
It's not a particular matchup. I'll tell you what the league has done in recent years that has just thrilled me to death, and that is they started scheduling 8:30 games on Sundays. The ones played in London, obviously. I think this is the greatest thing ever. As a morning guy who hates to stay up late and hates to see his team on in prime time, these are great days when I can get up in the morning, turn on the TV, start watching football, and from dawn to dusk, I've got the NFL on right in front of me, and, of course, well into the night. And I think that not just one game, but every single 8:30 Central Time game that they have scheduled is the best game on the schedule. And if it was up to me, they'd have one every single week. So I'll start in week four with the Colts at Jaguars. And I'm just really looking forward to sitting back on that Sunday and camping out in front of the TV and enjoying my entire day.
Nice. And what about you, Chris?
No, I mean, the Saints finish the season with the Falcons again at home, or in Atlanta, I'm sorry. And that's, anytime those two teams play together, it doesn't matter how bad we are, and we both are, it's always a good game. So to finish the season off, I'm sure Tim feels the same way. Hopefully there's some playoff implications on this one, and well, we'll see how it ends. I think last year the Saints got them 20-17. So, always looking forward to those. And another real quick, the Saints play the Seahawks, and that's never good for the Saints. But this will be the return of Jimmy Graham and Brandon Browner, who was signed, I think, today back with Seattle.
Yeah.
So, there will be a lot of boos from the stands. So, that should be interesting.
Cool. Well, as far as me, it's difficult for me to pick one. There's a lot of good stuff. What I do like is that, I mean, definitely with the Chiefs schedule, once again, there's a the division games are very much backloaded in the schedule, including we are going to be playing the Broncos at 7:30 p.m. on Christmas night. So I hope there's going to be a present involved for me for that. But I mean, honestly, it's hard for me to not make my number one would be the week six game against the Raiders. It'll be our first game against the Raiders. We'll be coming off our bye. And I don't know. I think me and Monty are going to have some sort of a side bet going there. It worked up really well for the Chiefs to be able to kill some of that Raiders bandwagoning in that we play them in Oakland coming off our bye, and Andy Reid almost never loses off the bye. And then when we play at Arrowhead, we're coming off of a game against the Falcons, which shouldn't be too challenging for the Chiefs. But the Raiders are going to be coming off a very important game against the Bills. So basically, I take joy in things that concern Monty. And so therefore, yeah, those are my picks. But moving on to the Superfan Super Mock Draft, we went through the first round throughout the week, really broke that down in detail. And so now we're going to be taking a look at the rest of the 7-round mock. And, you know, obviously we're not going to go through this, you know, every single pick, pick by pick. But what I like about this whole exercise is the fact that we have 32 people picking for their team, and it's individual people making individual decisions. So, you know, you have a chance to really build a draft strategy. And so we're going to see how that strategy sort of emerged for different teams. So with the first pick of the second round of the draft, which would be pick number 32 overall, the Browns picked Michael Thomas, the wide receiver out of Ohio State, giving their new quarterback, Jared Goff, someone to throw to. You know, the wide receivers actually went off the board a little bit faster than I expected in our own particular draft. They followed up that pick by picking Yannick Ngakoue, the edge rusher out of Maryland, also DeAndre Houston Carson, the safety out of William Mary, in the fourth round. Then later in the fourth round, they picked up Antonio Morrison, the Florida linebacker. They picked up Jordan Payton, the wide receiver out of UCLA, who came at an interesting spot there in the fifth round, followed by Ronald Blair out of Appalachian State, and also in the fifth round. The third fifth rounder, they got Cole Toner, the tackle out of Harvard, and Jalen Marshall, the wide receiver out of OSU, in the sixth round. And in the seventh round, they picked up Dominique Robertson, the tackle out of Texas Tech. So it was a clear draft to try to set up the reboot of the Browns offense with Goff and Michael Thomas at the top. And it looks like they got pretty good value throughout in terms of plugging in other positions of need on, you know, and depth along the defense.
Yeah, I didn't know that they had this many picks. They've got 2 fourth rounds and 3 fifth rounders this year. They're going to have a chance to build quite a bit. And just one thing about the Jared Goff pick, Cleveland's going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch, not just because they're picking near the top of the draft, but because they've apparently gone all in on analytics. And I really don't know what the analytics are going to say about taking a quarterback high in the draft. And if Paul DePodesta is telling them that you've got a better chance to succeed recycling a veteran than picking a quarterback in the top five, they may take a pass on Goff. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with them, because I really don't know what direction they're going to go anymore. I mean, most people seem to think quarterback there. I'm not at all certain that that's what they're going to do. I'll say, if they're not going to pick a quarterback, they really, really ought to trade out. There should be a market for that pick. I'd be surprised if there wasn't. And they could make up some good ground in terms of picking up more draft picks if they can trade out.
You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'll go as far as saying I'll be surprised if they end up with either Wentz or Goff. Though I think it might be the right move, but everything you're saying is correct, and this could be a situation where I'm envisioning Bosa. I could see Bosa being the second pick in the draft, and it completely, if they cannot trade out, and it completely turns the draft on its head, because now you're going to have San Diego, who's sitting there, very happy Tuttle's there, but I'm sure feeling a lot of offers.
I was just going to pull out, it's not a given that San Diego is going to take a tackle there. They've got both their tackles under contract. I think they have guaranteed money that they owe both, and I just wanted to make sure that we got in there. I know that I've read several articles already this week, kind of doubting whether Tunsil's going to go to them. He could drop as far down as seven before he's picked, just because of need and situation on some of these teams.
So it's interesting because if you had to just, if you looked at the way that our draft went and you had to give an MVP title to a GM involved in this, I think our very own Raven superfan Rex made a very strong case for it. And in fact, because in our the top of our draft, they essentially made the Titans trade. Obviously, they didn't get quite the bounty that the Titans did because they weren't moving down from number one. But the Rams traded up to their spot, and they got a bunch of picks to work with in this year in our Superfan Super Mock draft. They then moved up again from their spot to hop up right ahead of me in the Titans spot and picked in the 33rd overall pick, cornerback Eli Apple out of Ohio State. They then, at their own pick, at number 36 overall in the second round, they picked up Jalen Smith. And then they had another, the other second rounder from the Rams, number 43rd overall, they picked Shalik Calhoun, the edge rusher from Michigan State. In the third round, they grabbed Scooby Wright, the inside linebacker out of Arizona. Then they, in the fourth, their three fourth rounders, they got offensive lineman Joe Haig, guard Spencer Drango, cornerback Morgan Burns, and in this their two sixth rounders they got D tackle Mike Ioannidis and guard Reese Odhiambo. But yeah, with that string of three second round picks, grabbing Eli Apple, Jalen Smith, and Shalik Calhoun, that was quite well done by the Ravens, and actually did what Tom, you were saying the Titans might end up doing there.
I thought this was a pretty good draft. I have to tell you, not to be negative, but it's my nature. Jalen Smith, I would have never touched him in the second round. I was surprised Rex did that. He's got nerve damage in that knee. The medical on him has not been real encouraging by most people's accounting. And, you know, the word Marcus Lattimore just continues to come up in association with him. And I got to tell you, I think there are 32 team doctors around the league, and they're all telling general managers the same thing. And that's, we don't know. With nerve injuries, you just don't know if they're going to come back or not. And I'll be very surprised if anyone takes him before the fourth round. I could be wrong. It could be a lot more positive than that. Lattimore's knee injury was probably worse. But it was pretty gruesome. But I got to tell you, I've got a feeling that he's going to drop substantially. I don't see him going in the second round.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I've seen reports now that Smith is not going. I mean, the coaches basically don't expect him to play a single snap in 2016. And regardless of the talent, I mean, I think just teams are not going to draft a guy that high. They know they're not going to get anything out of him in 2016. And with the rest of his career very much, very much uncertain. What I am personally impressed by or annoyed by, because as you heard from the earlier show when we were breaking down the first round, I traded down with the Cowboys and moved back to their spot at number 34. And I was sitting there pretty. I'd had some talks with Ravens Rex. He wanted to move up to my spot, I think, for that same move. But I didn't take it because I was sitting there watching Eli Apple, who is many guys, number two ranked corner, falling all the way down to me. And if I could have moved back and still gotten Eli Apple, it would have been great. But he moved just right in front of me and snatched him. So that was, to me, one of the big moves of the whole second round.
Yeah, I was surprised that the corners fell in this draft. I mean, we'll be getting to the Dolphins in a little while, but they fell farther than I thought they were going to. I was a little surprised. I think people are really wary about some of these taller cornerbacks and their ability to cover, but I have a feeling they're going to go higher than this. I don't know that he could make it to the second round. It wouldn't be shocking or anything, but I got a feeling he goes higher than that.
There was I believe it was Bucky Brooks was talking about the cornerbacks recently. And, The big one he kept mentioning was Mackenzie Alexander. You know, that's somebody a lot of people had penciled in as a first rounder. He's actually projecting that he's going to go late second, early third. So with that, that's going to naturally push somebody like Eli Apple up. he might be a late day one pick now.
That's interesting. So, you know, I had Mackenzie Alexander on the board when it came down to me at number 34, where we are now. And I was kind of torn. I nearly wanted to take him, but I also feel like he's really more of a late second round, maybe early third guy. He's got the man skills, but he didn't have any interceptions. And I don't know. There's a bit of a concern there. He just seems more like a day three guy to me. So I ended up taking Cody Whitehair, which I explained on the pod on Thursday. So go look up my full explanation about how I like Cody Whitehair there. But we then move on to the San Diego Chargers, picking at number 35, Laramie Tunsil at number 3 overall in the first round, which is still probably the odds-on favorite for them now, even after the mega trade. At number 35 overall, they picked the safety Von Bell. And in the third round, they grabbed center Nick Martin out of Notre Dame. In the fourth round, they grabbed Tyler Higbee, the tight end out of Western Kentucky. They got wide receiver Kenny Lawler in the fifth. And in the sixth, they got their maybe small-handed quarterback of the future in Brandon Allen, as well as cornerback DJ White. And in the seventh, they grabbed Darnell Green. So I think it was a fairly good draft for them as well. You know, they have needs kind of all over, although the defense is doing okay. But it was interesting to see, see San Diego get a quarterback, albeit late.
I know Chris does not agree with this, so it'll be interesting to hear his comment. But I'm in love with Brandon Allen. I think he's underrated in this draft. I don't know where he's going to go. I'll be interested to see what the GMs think. But I watch him play, and I really think he's a pretty good looking quarterback. I thought this was a pretty good draft. I like the Nick Martin pick too. I watched him in the Senior Bowl. He looked to me like he was the best lineman on the field. So that's a good pick there.
And I'm not the biggest Brandon Allen fan. He reminds me a lot of the name escaped me all of a sudden. The kid who played for Detroit. He actually had got a couple starts in Dallas this year, and didn't do much with him. Kalen Moore, I believe. He's so small. His hands are small. I will say, on the plus side, though, along with the Nick Martin draft, Kenny Lawler that late might be more of an error on us to let him go that far down. But that could be a great pick for San Diego.
Well, and on the next pick, it was Rex grabbing Jalen Smith, which we've already talked about. And then it was the 49ers at number 37 overall who picked Kyler Fackrell, the linebacker out of Utah State, which I think is a bit of a reach here. But they grabbed Vernon Hargraves in the first round. In the fourth, they picked, or actually in the third next, they picked up Deion Jones, the outside linebacker out of LSU, which I think is good value there. And then they grabbed Vernon Adams, a QB, in the fourth, as well as Kevare Russell, the cornerback, also in the fourth round. In the fifth round, with their three picks, they grab Chris Brown, the wide receiver, defensive end Alex McAllister, and Darian Griswold. In the sixth, they ended up with four sixth-round picks with a couple of compensatories, where they grabbed Blake Martinez, running back Keith Marshall, kicker Kaimi Fairbairn, and punter Drew Kayser, which means we might have been auto-picking for them at that point. but I don't know. To me, this looks like, I look at like Kyler Fackrell and Deion Jones, like in terms, I mean, look, they got both, which is fine. But I think Deion Jones is more of a second round guy, and Kyler Fackrell, I'm kind of surprised to see him drafted this high.
I agree. I think if you were to flip those two picks around, nobody's even having this discussion. They're just really happy with the draft.
Kind of surprised to see Vernon Adams there in the fourth round. That was kind of high. We'll see how high he goes. He's kind of short. I'd be surprised if he goes that high. We'll see.
And then we had next is at number 38 overall, the Jacksonville Jaguars, who grabbed Miles Jack in the first round. Again, I think that's still likely going to happen. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think it'd be a great pairing with Devontae Foster coming back. But in the second round, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Ryan, our super fan, grabbed the guy we were just talking about in Mackenzie Alexander. In the third round, they grabbed wide receiver Tyler Boyd. Then in the fourth, defensive end Bronson Kaufusi. In the fifth, running back Kelvin Taylor. And there are two sixth-round picks. They got linebacker Eric Stryker and tackle John Theus. And in the seventh-round pick, they grabbed defensive tackle Joe Heath. What Ryan wrote in is that he thought this was actually an excellent draft for them. They got the elite prospect in Jack, and he really didn't want to trade back. I mean, with all this talk of trades, it was something where he felt like they needed elite players and overall help on the defense. He clearly saw that there was some interest in Boyd. He was a guy that I wanted. I was not happy to see him get picked, snatched up once he started falling. But yeah, he said the one disappointment is that he's not sure he adequately addressed pass rush, which is a huge need for them. But Kaufusi is a guy who, you know, might be able to help him out there in the fourth round.
Yeah, Kaufusi is kind of a rising prospect. He's a guy that I've heard a lot about the last couple weeks. A lot of people really like him. He may go higher than that in the real draft. That may have been a deal in our draft. A lot of people are really starting to pay attention to him. He may supply some of that need at defensive end that he thought maybe was lacking.
Well, at 39th overall, we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who in the first round, they drafted defensive end Emmanuel Ogba, who I thought was, you know, it was an interesting pick. I'm not sure it was a huge reach, but it was a guy he really liked. Anyways, with their second round pick, they grabbed tight end Hunter Henry. And the third, they picked up center Graham Glasgow. And the fourth, wide receiver Colby Listonby. And the fifth, cornerback Rashad Robinson. And then with the two sixth-round picks, they got safety Tyvus Powell and tackle Tyler Mars. Hunter Henry is the first tight end off the board here, I think, at 39th overall, which is a bit of a surprise. Either way, our Buccaneers superfan Dan said that he felt that he got a lot of value in his selections and was able to add depth to the secondary and the offensive line. And he even sort of acknowledged that he reached a little bit with Ogba. And also he thinks that Colby Listonby was a bit of a reach, but he thinks he has the speed to be a deep threat for Jameis. And he feels like Hunter Henry was a great value for him. What do you think, Chris, your list aficionado?
I think he overdrafted in a couple of spots. And the Hunter Henry one in particular kind of just confused me. I have to watch the Buccaneers twice a year. And, you know, Austin Safarian Jenkins seems like he's at least competent enough to not have to go out and get somebody early. So I was kind of surprised about that. The pick that I like the most for them, though, is Grant Glasgow. We discussed him at length a few shows ago. We were doing the offensive big board. He's really underrated. He's somebody who can step in and kind of fill that hole of Logan Mankins, and actually be who they thought they were getting with Logan Mankins. So I'm very high on him.
Yeah, the tight end pick, all the tight end picks in this draft were interesting. They all came late. But there was a point when we got to like the fourth or fifth round when they really started flying off the board, and you could see it was because everyone realized that they hadn't filled a need that they had. But the problem is that there are so few good tight ends that you can find anymore that, you know, nobody wanted to reach for them. So they all came off late, but there were a lot of them drafted. And I know that I wasn't the only one that was drafting big wide receivers instead of tight ends, because the tight ends that are there just really aren't all that good. So as usual, you know, we're running into this problem where you need tight ends in the pro game and they're not being developed in college. And you got to kind of look around and get a little creative to find them. I was very tempted to draft a linebacker with the idea that he might be converted. And we'll see how creative teams get at that position, as well as one or two others on the field that are becoming kind of tough to get, like guard.
Well, that then takes us to the New York Giants at number 40 overall. They picked DeForest Buckner in the first round, which was great value at number 10. I think now with all the moves at the top, they'd be lucky to have Buckner still fall to them at 10, but we'll see. But I think they got even better value at number 40 here. And the second round, they grab wide receiver Will Fuller, the speedster. Then in the third and fourth rounds, they picked a couple of cornerbacks in Eric Murray and James Bradbury, respectively. They picked up linebacker B.J. Goodson in the fifth, and in the sixth, they grabbed running back Kenyon Drake. What do you think of the Will Fuller pick, Tom?
I did not like it. I, of course, liked DeForest Buckner. I'm sure that the New York Giants will do backflips all the way up to the stage to grab him if they can. Will Fuller, I have a problem with. You know, he kind of burst onto the scene at the combine. He's one of those guys that ran a fast 40 and showed a lot of speed in a class that really doesn't have a lot of speed. And I think that jacked up his evaluation quite a bit. I always distrust guys like that. And I know that, you know, when you watch him at Notre Dame, he dropped balls all over the field. If you go back and try to watch him and see what kind of a wide receiver he is, you almost have to make up your mind to ignore the fact that he's dropping all these balls just so you can see what else he can do, because it's hard to get around it. I am not very high on him. Could be wrong, of course. A lot of, you know, very well-respected people like him a lot more than I do. He's just not one of my favorite guys.
You know, and I agree. I'm not a big fan of Will Fuller. He just a receiver who drops passes. I mean, it's unfortunate. And, you know, if they can get him past that and get his hands to be respectable, then it's a great value pick. But this seems something also. Their offense already seems to have a lot of speed at the wide receiver position. So it's kind of surprising to me to take a one-trick pony and not try to find somebody like a Tyler Boyd later. Somebody who can more fill a possession spot.
That's a good point. Well, we now come to you, Tom, at number 41 in the second round. You picked Ezekiel Elliott in the first round in a pure value pick, which I think is actually a really interesting fit. I would be amazed if you lasted down to you at 11, but you never know. But then you got a great value with your second round pick as well. At number 41, you get Jerron Reed, the D end out of Alabama. And this is a bit of a trend here. Actually, the defensive linemen, they fell a bit in our draft here. In the third round, you picked up defensive end Adolphus Washington, who also exemplifies that trend. Safety Jeremy Cash in the fourth. And also in the fourth, you grabbed QB Jacoby Brissett out of NC State. You got wide receiver Chris Moore, who I wanted to grab a few picks after you, in the fifth. In the sixth, with your two picks, you grabbed cornerback Daryl Worley and defensive tackle Adam Gotsis. And in the seventh, you grabbed Marquez North, a tight end out of Tennessee. So tell us how your draft went here, Tom.
It was okay. The Bears are going to be fortunate this year in that their biggest need is the strength of the draft, which is defensive line. So when I took Ezekiel Elliott in the first round, it wasn't really what I wanted. I wanted defense with that pick. But Elliott was, you know, the only real, I guess, difference maker that I saw left on the board. And I'll be very surprised if he lasts to 11. I think the Philadelphia Eagles traded up with the Dolphins to get to that eight slot because they thought Elliott would be there so they could pick him. And I'll be surprised if they don't go in that direction. I was very happy to get Reed and Washington. Both of them, even Washington, arguably is first round talent. So I was very happy with that. The rest of the draft was okay. The Bears have a reasonably big need at cornerback, and I didn't really feel that. I took Worley in the sixth round. I don't know that he's going to be a starter. So they may, if that is actually the way that their draft goes, they may have to find a way to address cornerback in another way. But other than that, I thought it was reasonably good. I was happy with the availability of the defensive linemen. I'm not terribly surprised they fell. There are just so many of them, and everybody's picking for need, and not everyone needs defensive line help.
I'm gonna disagree with you. I think it was great. At least your first three picks. You and I had discussed this a bit. You know, I mean, we chatted back and forth while the draft was happening. And to get Reed that low is insane. And then to follow that up with Dolphins Washington, and you literally, picking Reed is why I traded back a few picks from here. And then I traded back with the idea of being able to get Dolphins Washington. I mean, you found multiple ways to screw me in this draft. So I'm a big fan of it. I think your first three picks have the ability to be Pro Bowlers and Pro Bowlers early. I mean, you literally picked three of my favorite players. So I think it's well done, and time will tell. But 3-4 years from now, I see you being very happy if you're able to pull this off.
Yeah, I think this draft could fall pretty well for the Bears. So we'll wait and see.
All right, and that'll do it for this section of the Superfan Super Mock Draft. We are going to come back at you with some more of the second round and the later rounds, as well as breaking down our Superfan strategies as they went through the draft in the next episode that's going to drop a bit later. Keep an eye out for that and the rest of our content. We'll have more coming very soon.